On this special, Is This Normal?, we wanted to give the microphone to LGBTQIA+ voices this Pride Month.
I'm Dr. Patrick Crane, Associate Professor at the College of Nursing.
And I am your co-host, Harley Brown, Communications Coordinator for the College of Nursing. I have been openly queer for 8 years navigating healthcare systems as a gay man. I have worked in my communities advancing LGBTQIA+ rights in various ways. A key way was working at the Center for Gender and Sexuality at University of Michigan Flint campus. I have also advocated to the Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer about transgender rights and barriers in the way of the LGBTQIA+ community in Michigan.
Hey, Harley.
Hey, Patrick.
June is Pride Month. Who's a well-known expert in the LGBTQIA+ community who we can talk to?
I know just the person.
Today we're honored to introduce Jenny Knight. She's a lifelong advocate for the LGBTQIA+ community. She's been involved in the community for over 30 years and has served on several boards of directors in Grand Rapids. She is passionate about making Grand Rapids a safe, affirming, and wonderful place for all to live, work, and visit. Jenny has worked for Cherry Health Services and Spectrum Health, where she has dedicated her career to providing quality health care to all patients. She is a strong advocate for the LGBTQIA+ community in healthcare settings and has worked to ensure that all patients feel welcome and respected. Jenny is a role model for the LGBTQIA+ community in Grand Rapids. She is a tireless advocate for equity and inclusion, and she is committed to making Grand Rapids a better place for all. Hi, Jenny. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Why don't you start us off by telling us a little bit about your background and how you developed a passion to work with this community?
Well, I'm part of the community. I always have been. It just took me a little while to find the right words to identify who I was. I grew up in a time and in a place where LGBT people were not visible. So over 30 years ago, I found language and realized exactly how I did identify and where I did fit and came out. I think I had a very easy coming out process because my family was accepting. It wasn't like a big ordeal. But I found people that it was a big deal. You know, they weren't getting health care. They weren't accepted by their families or their communities. And every time I heard that, it seemed like it ignited a little bit more in me to fix that. I think I've always been a fixer. I'm the youngest of five. If you know, youngest child often is the fixer, and that's my role.
So you said something I don't want to let slide by, because I think often when I talk to my friends and my loved ones who are in the LGBTQIA+ community, there's a lot of common stories about fear of coming out, but we don't often talk about the fear or the apprehension or the difficulty with finding healthcare when you have very specific needs. And you mentioned that in passing. Are you wanting to share a little bit with our audience about what some of your experiences were that helped you that really directed you towards helping others so they didn't have similar experiences?
Yeah. I mean, as you said, I worked for Cherry Health Services. I worked for Spectrum Health, and I currently work for Catherine's Health Center, which is a small FQHC in Grand Rapids. And all along, I would hear stories from people that, you know, they were treated poorly. You know, they were getting weird looks, or providers would be like, I don't provide that kind of care. The emergency departments in people that are transgender would be called it or a he, she. And just hearing those stories and seeing the negative impact it had on people, because then they started avoiding care. And if you're not getting the preventative care and you're not following up with your provider, things get missed. I was diagnosed early with cervical cancer, and having to go through that, I know what it's like. I missed one pap smear and seeing my doctor, and I went from being normal to having cancer. So I know that it's important to have this kind of care and preventative stuff, but the community avoids it because they have bad experiences, aren't treated very respectfully.
And as a queer person myself, I've definitely been on the receiving end of that, where I've gone into the hospital with severe pains and I've just been wrote off as just being dramatic because they're viewing me as a queer man and not as a person who is in pain, which led to me having a major issue where I had a blockage in from my gallbladder, causing a liver infection, and left me in the hospital for a week. That if 6 months prior, if they would have taken my pain seriously, that would have never evolved into that. And I think it's very hard as a queer man in general, or just a gay man or a bisexual man, when we talk about HIV prevention and AIDS prevention, oftentimes we have, that's such an awkward conversation because you don't know how a provider is going to be towards you. You don't know if they're going to be homophobic because there's not a clear way to tell until that conversation kind of comes about. And that's such an intimate experience and conversation to even have.
But you said it's such an awkward conversation. It shouldn't be. It should be a very normal conversation to have with your healthcare provider. You know, who are you having sex with? What kind of sex are you having? Not because they're morbidly curious, but because they need to keep you safe. And the only way to keep you safe is to know that about you.
Exactly. And I think it's because of how stigmatized that the queer community has been, that it really has created those kind of barriers. So we can see it in action, and we see it quite often. It's so disheartening.
It is. But if you turn it around on people, it's like the same questions could be asked of the heterosexual community, because they're not all having very what people consider traditional sex all the time anyways. Right. So why is it so much different if the person identifies differently than you?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's an incredibly underserved area of healthcare in general. And when I'm talking to my nurse practitioner students, I actually do a whole lecture of, you need to talk about sex with your patients. And it doesn't matter what gender you identify with or what community you belong to. We need to talk about sexual relationships because it's a fundamental part of human health and well-being and emotional health and physical health. And so we still have stigmatized conversations around, you know, straight sex. So it's sad, but not surprising that a stigmatized population. And I would actually say for even my early on in my education practice, it was just off the radar, right? Right. There's a whole population of folks who need high quality preventative care that weren't in the research, weren't in the guidelines. And finally, I think we're starting to get a little bit momentum, but we still have a very long way to go. Just talk about it. Open the conversation.
It costs us so much money. And people don't think about that. It's like, if you wait like you did, I mean, I was involved in a case that, you know, it was a transgender man. And by the time he got referred and came into the gynecologic oncology office, he had stage 4 ovarian cancer and he avoided healthcare forever. Yeah. And it could have, he got amazing treatment because the team was really dedicated to that, but he had stage 4. There's only so much you can do. Right. And he and his wife both said they knew for years something was wrong, drastically wrong, but he just was so, you know, dysphoric plus the issues with the healthcare system, then he avoided it. And he could have had such better outcomes at much cheaper cost to the system if we could have gotten him in there in preventative care. If he would have just gone for the yearly pap smears, it would have been caught much sooner.
Tell us a little bit, following up on that, some of the progress you've experienced over the course of your career.
Well, I think for one, years ago, the emergency departments, the LGBT community coming in, you know, had some very bad experiences. And they've done a lot of training. They really are all focused on doing some of the training and getting people more comfortable with this community and with collecting information like sexual orientation and gender identity. The electronic health systems have gone a long ways. Almost every electronic health system has a function in it called SOGI data collection. So sexual orientation and gender identity. If they accept funds from Medicaid and Medicare, they have to be able to collect it. It's still kind of on the health system's business decision if they're going to use that or not, but a lot of them are using that and collecting that data. And that makes it easier for the provider to know what conversations to have and how to diagnose people and do some preventative maintenance. So that is a huge step in the right direction. I would like to see a lot more education and training on staff from the beginning to the end. People really focus on the clinical staff, like the providers, the nurses, the medical assistants. They don't always include the security guards in your buildings, the front desk staff, your greeters, your wayfinders if you're in a hospital. And those people are all key because a patient has to get through all of them to get to see you as the provider.
Right.
And I've heard multiple people say, you know, oh, I really love my provider, but I get so dysphoric talking to all these other people that they stop going. So if we could focus on everybody, that'd be great. And a lot of systems are doing that. I know a couple of the hospital systems in Grand Rapids, when they rolled out the SOGI data collection in their systems, they did do training from the top down. Everybody had to do the training. And that's amazing because then people are more prepared to have the conversation and just greet somebody appropriately.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Right. It's a small way to create an inclusive environment. And that's the small steps that we have to do. They seem so giant if you look at it in a big picture, but it's really not. It's just small individual looking at different sections where your patients will interact.
Well, and if we take it out of the LGBT community, people really focus on being polite and respectful. And I think we do that, but we do that in a very narrow way that how we were raised and what we think is polite and respectful. Our communities are so diverse. I mean, we have people coming from all over the world and they view it very differently. And I mean, I had to work with a elderly gentleman from Vietnam early in my career. And I thought shaking somebody's hand and introducing myself was professional. What I didn't know is that in his culture, me as somebody significantly younger than him, it was disrespectful for me to instigate the handshake. And that got me thinking, okay, how do I do this and be respectful, but honor where they're from? And so then I just had to reprogram myself to early on, ask people, how would you like to be addressed? And I think if we can take it out of just focusing on LGBT, it's like, look at everybody in the community as having an opportunity to learn and ask people, how do you want to be addressed? Let's normalize it.
Yes, let's normalize it.
I think one of the takeaways from healthcare is patient-centered care is really just asking, right? It's asking, what do you prefer? What do you want? That's an easy conversation.
Patient-centered care, and that term has been around for a while, but I think it's lost a lot of its meaning because it's what still the health systems determine is patient-centered instead of asking the patient, what do you want?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's still significant systemic barriers to overcoming some of that as well.
Right. Because I still hear, I've been working in healthcare over 20 years. I still hear patients are discharged for being non-compliant.
Yeah.
They're not non-compliant. Your treatment plan doesn't work for them.
That's right.
I think it's very interesting because in the LGBT community, it is often the white gay men or white lesbians that get a lot of the attention. We don't talk about the trans community. We don't talk about those of color who are in the community. They get overshadowed oftentimes. Did you see that kind of at the center?
Yeah.
And what kind of work have you done to kind of fill that inequity?
So the Grand Rapids LGBT Healthcare Consortium, our board of directors, when we first put it together almost 3 years ago, we were intentional to be diverse. We wanted all the voices at the table. And so we had 50% of our board were people of color. Four of them had to step away. Two moved. One, the job got in the way, and the other one had some health issues. So we're down to two that are, we just had a third person join. So we've lost some of our members on the board and we're recruiting, but we're wanting to recruit very intentionally so that we're having other representation. And even looking at, youth, how can we get youth involved with us? You know, I'm sure they look at us and be like, well, that's a bunch of old people. But it's important to us that we hear their voices too. Because my wife and I do a lot of trainings around the state about LGBT stuff, but we're bringing it in with the healthcare lens. My wife is a nurse by training and is a nursing professor at Grand Valley State University. And then I've got experience managing. So we bring both of those lenses to it, but we want to hear what everybody has to say, because when we're talking to either faculty or healthcare providers, or we just did a talk for health information management people, they wanted to know if we can bring in other voices and share other experiences, it makes it more relevant to them and more real to the people that are hearing the stories.
So you've worked with several health institutions. And you touched on this a little bit, but what have been some of the challenges working specifically within the healthcare industry?
There has been very little training and education in the medical curriculums for people. And so a lot of providers, if they're really good at this, they did a lot of self-study.
Right.
And it's very limited. Also, there's a lot of parts of Michigan that aren't very open and affirming and welcoming to the LGBT community. So a lot of our talent that we're spending time and money and energy training are leaving the area. So I think we're getting better at including those points in our curriculums. Where we need to move that to is making sure that when they're doing either job shadowing or they're doing their residencies or they're doing rotations, that they also have a full spectrum of who they're seeing. I'm part of a committee at MSU College of Human Medicine in Grand Rapids where we did a survey of alumni and faculty trying to see, did they feel like they got prepared for this? And were they comfortable with what they had? And a majority of them are still saying, no, they don't feel like they're getting what they need. And I, personal opinion, I'm not sure the faculty is getting what they need to feel comfortable teaching this material.
Right. Yeah, I from a professor standpoint, and I'm sure you and your wife have had this conversation, there's not very concrete descriptions certly in nursing curricula of what that content should be. We talked to DEI initiatives, and that's sort of where it gets lumped. But my personal philosophy are those things need to be threaded throughout a curriculum. It needs to be talked about like any other patient, right? Where this is how it's done. These are the needs. This is how you communicate. It needs to be performed over and over again to really show competency.
Well, and as an outsider looking in, because I'm outside of the healthcare world, I think it's very interesting because you have to weave it in and make it authentic. You have to talk about the different kinds of family systems.
Right.
You have to talk about the stereotypes that the LGBT community often faces. And I feel like as an education as a whole, as a recent grad, it still isn't there. It's working to get there, but it's still not quite there.
Yeah. And one of the things that really disturbs me from a personal level are when we are seeing discriminatory laws trying to keep a community totally shut out of the way a place lives, is that the healthcare providers who are going to be supportive and embrace and advocate, they get pushed out because they don't want to practice in that environment. And then what you're left with is this heterogeneous, am I allowed to say nightmare? On the podcast, where there is no one to mentor and to really push forward, and maybe a few stick around and are really motivated to fight, but it worries me greatly because how does the next generation learn and know and feel supported?
Right. Yeah. If there's no mentors,
The
same old continues to happen.
Right.
And in a lot of things we know in healthcare, the same old doesn't work, but yet we haven't changed it in 100 years. So
welcome to our next podcast on the status quo of healthcare.
But yes. It's so true, because remember when the AIDS epidemic happened and how gay men were just dying and their partners would have to erase their entire lives together.
Absolutely.
And then we saw it again with, I believe it was monkeypox, how the gay men and bisexual men were blamed constantly. And it's just very frustrating because we lost a whole generation of gay men, gay and bisexual men, to a disease. And you can see it like throughout the history of our community and the LGBT community. You can see how trans advocates have just died because of diseases, because nobody will treat them. I think it's very frustrating, and I worry that we will take that step back again.
Well, yeah. And like any other mistreated group, it's going to create generational trauma, right? And then you have to deal with not only that tremendous loss of human life, but the implications for all the generations of loved ones after them, right? And it just, those are the things that disturb me on a very deep level.
Well, and it'll again hurt how healthcare, how LGBT people go for healthcare because they will have mistrust in it.
We did a training at a private office, and one of the providers said, "Would you please tell the community to stop yelling at me? I didn't do this." And I was like, "You're right, you didn't do this, but your community did this because it's years of bad behavior." So yes, while you may not have feel you earned that anger from this community member, it is part of your responsibility to rebuild that trust.
And it's very hard because you are in a system that was set up for a straight, white, heterosexual man that is cis.
Yes, very much so. And I think once we can change some of our overarching governing systems, some of things may change. But as long as everything is built to be heteronormative and cis normative, it's not going to change. My wife, I use the term wife, but they're non-binary and they use they, them pronouns. And that gets people very confused. And it's like, no, we literally sat at the dining room table for almost 2 hours talking about words and what they would feel comfortable with. And when we got to the end, they were like, okay, I can feel comfortable with that. But if we have to explain that to people, but you don't have to explain to me why your kids call you Mima and Papa, what difference does it make? It's just a word, but we get really hung up on some of those things when they're not heteronormative.
Exactly. This kind of leads into our next questions. Where do you see disparities for the LGBTQIA community?
It'd be easier to list where I don't.
That's exactly how I feel.
Yeah. I mean, I am a cisgender female. So I pass everywhere I go if I'm by myself. Everybody automatically assumes I'm a straight, white, cisgender female. Most of that's right, but not all of it. And so I have a whole lot of privilege when I'm out and about, unless I'm with my wife. Then the attitudes and looks change. It's also different. I often will have a badge on or a pronoun pin on that has, and you know, every once in a while I get the, you know, they'll be looking at the pin and give me this funny look, or they'll automatically assume I'm an ally. Why are we making assumptions?
Right. I think it's very hard as a very publicly queer person. I paint my nails as a mask presenting person where I have a lot of privilege being white, but also I've had issues in bathrooms. I've had issues in different situations where I've been stared down, unwelcomed, and just, it's very interesting how the simple act of me just painting my nails a pretty color can make somebody so angry where I can't use a bathroom in a certain place.
There used to be a show on the TV called Ally McBeal.
Oh, yeah.
I loved that show. It was about a group of lawyers, like high class, expensive lawyers. This was in the 90s. Everybody in that law firm used the same multi-stall bathroom. I mean, that stuck out to me back then because it was like, oh, really? I'm like, what a great idea. How novel. Adults who could all use a stall in a bathroom and not get freaked out about it. Who cares? You go in the bathroom, wash your hands.
Right.
Yeah.
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 Right. I know I've been at the Van Andel Arena and I had to go to the bathroom. So I waited a little too long. And the line in the women's room is always, you know, 10 times longer than the men's. I couldn't wait. And I wasn't about to ask all those women if I could cut in front of them. And right next door, there was no line. I went in the men's room and there was two guys standing washing their hands. And I said, guys, I just have to pee so bad and I can't wait. And then one guy just put his hands up and said, have at it, lady. You know, I went in a stall. But my wife did that when we were at the Van Andel Arena. I panicked because I was scared to death they were going to get beat up in the bathroom. And then we were traveling. We have a 10-year-old son who's African-American. And this was 2 years ago. So he was 8 and he had to go to the bathroom. So we stopped at a rest area and we get out and my wife and son go in the men's room and I went in the women's room and I panicked because I'm like, oh my God, what if Darian calls Jay mom in the men's room? They're going to get beat up. So when they came out, I'm like, we need a safety plan because I can't handle this. So our adult children call my wife Makua, which means parent in Hawaiian. And so now when we're out in public, Darian calls Jay Makua to keep them both safe. But it's sad that we have to tell him we have to have the safety plan so you and mom are safe.
It is very sad. And I know I have safety plans with friends of mine where they always have my location. I don't go places alone because I just know my being publicly queer is very dangerous. It's choosing my happiness over my safety.
And when we do trainings, we tell people constantly, we know this sounds melodramatic because we talk about people getting beaten up and assaulted in bathrooms. And we say, but it's not. And if you don't believe us, go to a transgender day of remembrance once. It's in November, and they're talking about all of the transgender people who have lost their lives in the year previous simply because they're a transgender person. And a majority of them are women of color.
You just kind of gave me a moment of reflection where, you know, as a cisgender white male, I have never had to even consider a safety plan for using a public restroom. And it's something that as a nurse practitioner, I have never even thought to talk to my patients about who do not identify as cisgender. And now I've just had this aha moment. So thank you for that. But also, I wanted to check in too, because my wife is a member of a roller derby team, which has been very, very welcoming to everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody. And that was my first experience with really a mixed gender bathroom where everyone used the same one. And you know what? It was great. It moved 30 times quicker. Like if people would just try it.
I know. I mean, I think the women would be on board.
That's right.
Because they get really sick and tired of those long lines everywhere.
I know.
But yeah, that's been an incredible community to be affiliated with too, because it really does give me an opportunity to really be embedded within that community and learn new things too. So just wanted to let you know that I just had this aha moment today. So this is why we talk.
That's right. And you don't learn anything new if you don't have conversations with people who are different.
It's all about lived experiences and everybody's story to create a more inclusive world.
Not just in June. I really advocate for people. Right. Please don't celebrate Pride and Pride Month. Do the work in June. Bring, you know, educate yourself. And then from July to May, celebrate all you want.
Don't be part of the rainbow washing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and people do that, I think, with good intentions, but they don't realize the bad it does because then they're only gay in June. And they're not the rest of the year. We're gay 24/7, 365 days out of the year. I can't walk away from this if I wanted to. And they look at it during June, but then they forget about it July to May. Right. So let's do the opposite. Let us celebrate in June and y'all support us. And then July through May, you can support it.
What are some things that you can think that can be done to make our communities be more inclusive?
Look at the people. It doesn't matter what their orientation is, they're a person. I do not like the phrase treat others like you would want to be treated because they may not want to be treated the same way as I do. So trauma-informed care is an amazing tool to have and be able to just treat everybody like they have trauma because 25% of our community has had severe trauma, you know, and it's probably a higher percentage in the marginalized communities. So look at it like a spice cabinet. If all we cooked with were salt and pepper, it'd be boring. We would not have very inviting food. So our community, if it was all made up exactly like us individually, it'd be kind of boring, in my opinion. But if we add more spices, our food gets richer and more vibrant. If our communities are embracing everybody, because we all have very unique talents, very unique gifts that we bring to the community, and the more we invite everybody in, the more richer, vibrant, and stronger we are, healthier. We're going to talk about health. So if we bite and join everybody in, we can help them get healthier. They're not going to avoid us if they feel like we care about them truly and want to embrace them. So people think it sounds hard, but it's not. It's being a kind, compassionate human being that just, first of all, mind your own business. It doesn't matter to me who you sleep with. And it really isn't about sex with us. It's about relationships, mm-hmm. you know. So don't worry about that. You don't have to judge religions. There's a lot of different religions, and not one is better than the other, again, in my personal opinion. And I don't think anybody's religions prohibits them from being a kind human being. We can have very decent, respectful interactions and be different. So I think we've lost the ability to have conversations about differences, which is sad because you will never change your mind if you don't have a conversation with somebody different.
You're salt and pepper. You're going to be boring.
Yeah. And I don't mean change your mind, but you're not going yeah. to maybe change think. A view that's yeah. negative. Yeah. I mean, I was raised with a bit of a prejudice against or negative connotations against people who were Jehovah's Witness. I worked with a couple of people who were, and I actually started asking them questions, be like, can you explain to me? And they did. And I had a much better understanding of their religion and why some of the things that I thought were, well, I didn't agree with. It was like, oh, now I understand. So I had a better understanding of them, and I view it totally different. I never would have thought that if I hadn't had the conversation with the person. So I think if we could, as a community, learn, let go of all that stuff, especially the stuff that's been happening in the last 5 years about, you know, negativity and all the hate that's being spewed, and it's okay to be that vocal and hateful, that's damaging to us as a community, even to people that are just like you. If you're spewing hate, mm-hmm. that's damaging to them too. And let's learn how to be respectful of each other and welcoming and value people, because every human being has value, every single one. Let's find the value in it.
Absolutely. Are we ready for the hard-hitting question?
I'm ready for the hard-hitting question.
Okay.
All right. So we ask each guest a hard-hitting question at the end. So let me ask you this before my hard-hitting question. Does your family road trip ever?
Oh, yeah. We love road trips.
You love road trips.
Love road trips.
Okay. So what's your go-to road trip snack?
Potato chips. Uh-huh. I love salty stuff. And licorice.
Oh, nice.
But my wife hates licorice.
Ours is combos. And it has to be the pizza with the pretzel, pepperoni pizza with pretzel. It goes on every road trip. And then beef jerky. And it used to be pistachios, but she got an allergy. So that took that fun away. Yeah.
Oh,
man. Any particular chips, or do you mix it up?
Mix it up, but I really like barbecue chips.
Oh, yeah. Barbecue chips are great. Harley?
So I'm picky, and I'm very demanding with my friends. So if it's just regular snacks that we can store in the car, it's regular chips, some kind of pop, and then Kit Kats.
Oh, Kit Kats is good.
Kit Kats are the only chocolate I will eat. Don't know what has won in my life, but that is it.
Well, thank you so much for joining. This was an incredibly fun conversation. I'm so glad you made the trip here to record with us.
Yeah, I just really had a good time. So thank you very
Fantastic.
Much.
Fantastic.
To find your breaking news and latest updates within the College of Nursing, please refer to our website at nursing.msu.edu. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at @michstnursing. Again, that is michstnursing. We want to thank our guest, Jenny Knight, but we also wanted to thank you, the listener, for joining us. We are your hosts, Harley Brown and
Dr. Patrick Crane.
And remember,
wash your hands.